the thing that gets me the most is telling young girls, you know, you have to protect yourself from sex. Boys are going to try to chase after it. You have to say no, you have to say no, you have to say no. And one, again, it's putting the onus on them. Two, it's normalizing coercion because it normalizes the fact that they're going to keep trying. Three, it's unrealistic to tell girls that they're not going to enjoy sex and they don't want it. These young teenage girls have a sexuality. They are curious. They want to experiment. We have to empower them to do it in a healthy way. And as you said before, if they know that sex is meant to be a good thing, they will be able to distinguish between a consensual and a non-consensual situation and know when to get themselves out of a situation and when they're actually meant to be there.
I'm Sarah Kearns and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. Content warning. This episode discusses sexual assault and child sexual assault. If you need further support, please see the resources in the show notes. Chanel Contos is the Wonder Woman of 2021. She's educated, articulate, determined, and I think I speak on behalf of women as a whole when I say we are so incredibly proud of her courage and her success in beginning a national movement. She's also 23. At 13 years old, Chanel was sexually assaulted. She didn't realize that she had been assaulted until years later. And this needs to change. Chanel is demanding change from our government, demanding they improve sexual education within the curriculum to cover toxic masculinity, rape culture, slut shaming, victim blaming, sexual coercion, and enthusiastic consent, as well as queer sex education. I wanted to give a little bit of backstory before we launch into the episode. Chanel and I referenced the milkshake and taco ad during the podcast. If you haven't seen these ads by The Good Society, they were produced by the Australian Government's Department of Education. The Good Society is a website that declares it is a Respect Matters education resource and has tabs for students of different ages plus teachers. The actors and script tried desperately to be quirky and relatable but missed the point in so many ways, actually adding to problematic conversations. The ads were quickly removed after strong backlash, but it's left the country wondering if the government is capable of creating quality sexual education. If you haven't seen the ads, you can follow the links in the show notes. Hi, Chanel. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
So for anyone living under an absolute rock in Australia right now, you are the hype girl that women needed. And the rest of us are just sitting back going, yes, someone's doing it and someone's making waves and she's being heard. And I'd love, like, I know you've spoken about it a million times and I'm sure most people listening will have already a rough idea, but do you want to just quickly go over what happened? So you put something out to your Instagram and then just created, you know, a whole country's change. Just, you know, nothing major.
What actually happened was, so about a year ago, I had the initial idea for this and I basically wanted to bring attention to how many sexual assaults happen in school and how preventable they would have been with education. And I wanted to do this through calling out the names of schools, but keeping the victims and perpetrators anonymous. Basically take these, you know, testimonies to the schools and basically be like, you have a big problem in front of you, do something. And then fast forward almost a year to February 2021, and I was just with my friend and we were just so angry. Like, we were so upset and so angry. We were talking about our sexual assault experiences. You know, these had happened to us so many years ago, and we were just crying together and shaking. And all we were asking was, did they even know that they did this to us? Do they even know they did this to us? Like, this is probably something they've barely thought about since, and it's something that we think about most days.
I love that you're talking about that because everyone just thinks sexual assault is like an abduction from a stranger in a dark alley with full penetration, and that's a rape. And nothing that doesn't fit that criteria is rape. And, you know, what are you also upset about? So you're completely breaking that down.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. This type of rape culture I'm talking about is so subtle that the perpetrators genuinely don't even know they're doing it a lot of the time until they get older, or until, you know, they learn what consent is. So I posted an Instagram poll which asked the question, like a yes or no question, have you or has a friend ever been sexually assaulted by someone who went to an all-boys school in Sydney? And that was because that was, as I said, my initial target was to get to these independent boys' schools, because that's who I had connections with. And my direct following, you know, we kind of all went to these type of schools, and then it just absolutely blew up. And now I have 6,200 testimonies of sexual assault from every single state and territory in Australia.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. And what you just said then about the fact that I think that is the biggest thing that I want to come out of this whole conversation, the fact that sexual assault and rape isn't, as you said, a dark alleyway with a person approaching you from behind and while you kick and scream. It's actually more often than not someone you trust. It's someone who you're very happy to be kissing at the beginning of the night but don't want to be doing anything more with them later. It's probably someone that's your girlfriend or boyfriend, someone you've known for years, and that, you know, you're happy to be alone with them because you trusted them. And in that same breath, these type of school children who are raping, they are not inherently bad people. Like, they're not sadistic. They don't get pleasure out of the fact that they're hurting or raping someone. They just care about their own sexual desires more so than the person in front of them at the time.
They're lacking empathy. Like, where is the empathy in all of this? Because it's so easy to say, like, they didn't actually know what they were doing was wrong, but that means that we're raising teenagers and young adults to not have empathy for how somebody else, you know, or have a way to put themselves in somebody else's shoes and have those feelings.
And it's completely to do with how boys and girls are socialized in our society, you know, how parents socialize, how they bring up their girls or boys differently. You know, girls are taught to be submissive and empathetic and passive. And, you know, you're a woman, you know how easy it is to go through life just happy, smiling, no problems, whatever everyone wants, sure thing. But it's a challenge to go through life as a woman with strong boundaries, and you get applauded doing that as a man. And those values are set from as young as 3, 4, 5 years old.
Oh, absolutely. And I read the article you wrote for Vogue, which was just so articulate, and I just absolutely loved it. And if you haven't listened to it, everyone out there, I've forgotten that we were like recording a podcast. I've just been so keen to chat with you. Anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about. Chanel's written a beautiful article for Vogue. And in there you spoke about the fact that when you were 5, you were told to, you know, get changed and to wear something appropriate because a man was coming into the house. Can you talk us through that?
Basically, I just know that this is really, really common parenting. Like, I just know so many of my friends, and it's also like, it's always a funny, like, it's a viral TikTok that has like millions and millions of likes of people, you know, telling their parents like no when they tell them to change their top, whether that be in front of their, like, you know, their uncles, their dad, just like a random guy, anything. And it's not that our parents think that that specific person who's coming into the house would sexually assault us, but it's just about the fact that our society as a whole sexualizes young children. Mm. And that anyone, because it is so common in our society, anyone could sexualize a young child. And yeah, what happened, it was complete like normal procedure for me when I was young to be told to change my clothes, whether that be by, you know, my parents, or, you know, I remember the first time I got told to change my clothes at school was on year 6 camp. And I was like completely pre-puberty. I was wearing this top that showed a little bit of my collarbones, not that any of that should matter. And I remember like basically being told that that was in no way appropriate. And I was just so embarrassed and like cried so much after. We don't even realize how powerful it is to tell a young girl to constantly change the way she's sitting, change what she's wearing, change her behaviors to ensure that she doesn't get sexualized or sexually assaulted. And I think that a lot of parents think like, oh, I would never create a space where my child could not come to me with a sexual assault experience. But they don't realize that from as young as we can interact with them, they say these micro things that play on our mind and basically put the onus on us to prevent being sexualized, to prevent being sexually assaulted.
Yeah, you're giving that responsibility to a child as opposed to the adults.
Exactly. I mean, children should be allowed to walk around, you know, topless without...
But naked.
Sexual. Exactly.
And like you said, boys wear no shirts all the time. Like, I've got three boys that regularly wear nothing but their underwear. I swear they walk in my house and start stripping off. Yet young girls, like, you were told not to show your collarbone. Like, Why is a girl's collarbone so sexual as opposed to a boy's? Like, that's horrific.
Bizarre to me around, like, you know, I guess because you obviously can't control what type of bad people are in a public environment or something like that. But it's just the fact that our parents have such a level of distrust for the general community that when, you know, whoever it is coming into the house, you feel you need to cover yourself. And those habits carry with us. Like, you know, if I'm wearing, I don't know, skimpy, I do that inverted commas, you can't see me, like, say skimpy pajama
top. Oh, I got it. I got it through the voice, the tone.
Yeah. Skimpy pajama top or something, and then the doorbell rings and it's like, I don't know, a postman that's a man. You know, it's just my instinct to go and grab a jumper before I open the door, which is just such a bizarre reaction, but it is just socialized into us from so young to constantly protect ourselves and just make sure that, you know, it's as if the onus is on these. It's on girls in general in our whole society, but it comes from young girls to make sure to never give anyone the opportunity.
Yeah. And so you're saying with the schools and stuff, so obviously you started off with the all boys schools, which has always sort of had a lot of quite like problematic, right? Like, it's always been around and been spoken about in media and things like that about the all boys schools and problematic rape cultures and things, toxic masculinity in the works. What's the sort of comparison with public schools now you've been thrown head deep into this movement?
There are definitely a lot of sexual assaults that come out of public schools as well. Like, there's absolutely no denying it. But I do think that the empathy gap and the sense of entitlement over another's body, I think that the way that we socialize young boys in our society gives them an undeniable sense of entitlement, especially over a female's body. And then once you intersect that with the entitlement that comes from wealth, I think that's why these are so amplified. I also think, like, in toxic masculinity, you gain your social status from three main things. So first of all, we have your physical ability, how physically intimidating you are, which is why, you know, boys get in fights. And it's also competitive sport falls into that. And the level of competitive sport at some of these, like,
all the issues in cultures, the cultures in sport.
There's issues of culture and sport, and it's all linked. It's all about the, you know, that's a way of gaining, like, an alpha male status, and, you know, it involves exerting power over others and being, like, at a physical advantage. And, you know, the way that some of these all boys schools treat their athletes is, like, pretty much, it's almost laughable when you look at it from a distance. And, like, when you're there, they have crowd, like, they're treated like celebrities, but they're schoolboys, and, you know, they're talented and they should be applauded for those talents. But it's what, like, again, adds to the sense of entitlement. And then second of all, you have wealth that is a contributing factor of toxic masculinity. And it's, you know, why there's so much pressure on boys and men to be economically successful. And, you know, why they may feel it hard to be a stay-at-home dad or something like that, because that's not valued in men. Unfortunately, our society just values how much money they make. And, you know, that has lots of negative implications on men and their mental health in their adult lives. And then thirdly, in toxic masculinity, you get your social status from sexual conquests. And if you go to an all-boys school, the only time you're interacting with girls is on a Saturday night when your intention is to have something to talk about on a Monday morning. Although sexual assault is rampant in our whole society, in every school, in every institution, I think that is why these, like, specific schools do just breed the culture, because they're just kind of the perfect recipe for it. Take into account all of those factors. But that's not me saying that it doesn't happen absolutely everywhere. I'm just saying it's potentially more normalized and more prevalent.
And what about the education level? So obviously you've got religious schools versus your independent private schools, and then you've got, you know, your public schools. So I'm, you know, assuming that the religious schools probably have a much different sexual education to what the public schools do. And, you know, how do you think that all plays out?
I mean, most of the independent schools, pretty much all of them, I think, are, well, definitely all the ones I know of that my, like, friends went to have, like, associations with them as well. And I guess there's things like the, in New South Wales, at least, oh, in New South Wales and Victoria, I know for sure that, where consent education is provided, it is only to the public sector because it's provided by the government. And then that's optional for the independent sector to take on or not. And if that, in their opinion, goes against their religious ethos, then it's not adopted. But then on the other end of that, so I went to an independent all-girls school in Sydney, and it was before any sort of consent education was even, you know, heard of in the curriculum. And because my school had the resources and the flexibility to work outside of the curriculum, we had an external person come in and teach us what sexual assault was and what consent was. And that was when I learned that I had been sexually assaulted for the first time, when it was, you know, defined in front of me of what it was. In one sense, public schools have the resources provided them by government, and even if the teachers may not agree with the content, they have to deliver it.
Yeah.
And on the other end, independent schools and, you know, schools that run for profit have the privilege of, you know, being able to put extra resources into it and, you know, training their teachers on how to deliver the content and things like that.
Yeah. And it's scary that then, you know, my son goes to a private school, and it is like an Anglican school. So it is a religious based school. And that's something that, like, I'm a mother of three boys. So that's something that really does concern me. And I think that's, you know, when we go into a schools, because schools is like a big decision, right? When you get your kids and, you know, you're trying to find a good school. That's not something I think of asking. Like, hey, guys, how are you going to teach my kid about consent and and those kinds of things? You know, you're worried about do they have computers and iPads and, you know, these smart boards they've got now and all these amazing things that this is going to make me sound so old. I'm not. But, like, they didn't have any of that when I was in school, and I'm only 31, right? But it's like, oh, it's incredible the things that they have now, but you don't ask, hey, where are your values lying around this kind of teenage education to what's going to count?
It's so true. And also just on that, because I know that I'm having the unique opportunity right now to speak to parents, because those are the, you know, main listeners of your podcast. And reading Clementine Ford's book, Boys Will Be Boys, and in, like, one of the first chapters talking about gender, she was saying that, you know, there's all these jokes from, like, when a baby is, like, you know, when a baby is born, we're like, oh, I'm not going to let my daughter date because I'm not letting her near those boys, like, you know, all these things. And everyone is so concerned about making sure that their daughter stays safe and so concerned that their daughter will be abused or raped or, you know, anything like that.
The old protect my daughter with a shotgun mentality.
Exactly.
There's memes and, yeah.
But no one thinks, oh my God, I'm terrified that my boy will be the person to sexually assault or sexually abuse someone, because no one thinks that their child would do that. But it's, you know, just like it's got to be on the forefront of mind. When deciding a school, their consent education and sexual assault education and their culture is so crucial to it. Because I remember one time, I noticed this when we were in school, we were talking about, I had such a great group of friends in school. I'm so, so, so lucky. They're still my best friends today. And, like, we were talking about how, you know, different school levels and different schools have different cultures and vibes and, like, stereotypes that apply to them. And we just said, like, the reason we're all the same is not because our parents bring us up, it's because our friends do. So, you know, choosing what school that the culture that you're sending your child into is so important in who they will be as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the week that was in Australian government and Department of Education and the absolute absurd taco and milkshake videos that have been released by the Department of Education. So for our listeners, if you haven't heard it, apparently our government is incapable of just naming things and just using words that matter, like sex and penis and, you know, just facts, and we need to change women and consent and sexual activity to eating tacos and drinking milkshakes. Like, as a mum, the first thing we teach our children for their own well-being is that their penis is a penis and a vagina is a vagina and a vulva is a vulva. And, you know, that is how you keep your children safe when they're toddlers, when they're little kids, and they, you empower them. You don't shame their body. You empower their body. You empower them to be able to tell you what's going on and that an elbow is an elbow and a penis is a penis. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why that is such a hard concept for the government, and why these videos keep coming out where we're turning people and we're into objects, and we're removing the empathy and the victim empathy that we're trying to teach our children. We're removing it from the conversation altogether.
And we're also tabooing it at the same time. We're tabooing sexual assault by teaching it in euphemisms. I mean, and as you said, like talking about vagina and vulva and clitoris. I mean, when I was in school, the clitoris was removed from biology diagrams, which just
doesn't exist. No, and in high school,
because for some reason, female pleasure is just, you know, we can talk about
oh my god,
boys and masturbation and porn or whatever. They can talk about that as loudly as they want, but if we pretend to have any sort of pleasure from sex, and I agree that the government just turning it into it's honestly insulting to children, like. Those videos were targeted at year 11 and 12 students.
Oh, my God.
Year 11 and 12. I mean, I actually can't believe what I used to be able to do. You would go into an exam for 3 hours straight and concentrate and write, like, 20 pages. And, you know, you would be analyzing, like, freaking Shakespeare and, like, all this stuff.
And it's so patronizing to say.
Patronizing.
We can teach our toddlers, like, okay, this is what my proposal is, right? I had a bit of a rant on my Instagram today. I was like, they want to spend $4 million on these bunch of videos. Sorry to anyone that hasn't seen them. If you just go and search consent government milkshake taco, they will come up. Like, you spend $4 million, right? You just get 5 mums to go around to every high school, right? And we will teach them like we teach our 3-year-olds. You keep your hands to yourself. If someone doesn't want you to touch them, you stop immediately. If somebody says stop, you stop immediately. If you don't want someone to touch you, you say stop. Like, you know, I just don't understand how they even removed no from a consent video. We moved into this, they've changed it for people that haven't seen it. They've basically changed it from saying no or saying yes. They've added a maybe, which goes against every part of consent and coercion and everything we've ever learned. And they've invented this moving the line phrase.
It's so frustrating.
Where basically there's no option. There was a yes option and a moving the line to yes option. But there was no or respecting a no, and there was a good maybe.
If someone moves the line too many times, then consider the relationship. It's like, no, if anyone pushes your boundaries in any way once, that is it.
So they're talking about, quite literally implying about sexual consent, because, you know, God forbid we use the word sex in a sex education video. Yeah. They're implying that there's a consent, and they're implying that the person who's asking has moved the line from a no to a yes, and that has, you know, disrespected the victim's point of view. But they don't say that, though. But then the quote is, if the relationship is fundamentally disrespectful, then perhaps it's an even more difficult choice for you to decide whether to end the relationship. Like, sorry, what? When are we actually going to teach our kids and our teenagers, before they get into long-term relationships, that the second you're disrespected, you need to be questioning and you need to be asking for help and seeking guidance and making good decisions that's going to keep you safe and alive? Because we've woken up this morning to another woman murdered by her ex, who's tried desperately to move away and get away from him with her 3 little babies left on their own. You know, every relationship that ends like this starts off with disrespect, and we're teaching our kids that it's a difficult choice.
And we're also teaching them, we're not giving them the language. As you said before, when we're talking about vaginas and vulvas, language is empowering, and being able to call something abuse, that has perpetrators, and 2, validates victims, which is so essential in all forms of abuse, you know, domestic, sexual, everything. It's simplifying trauma of thousands of Australians who are still, because, you know, the girls and boys who are in school watching these videos, or if they, you know, obviously they're never going to see them now, but if they're in school watching,
well, some have seen them. I've had mums message me and say my kids have seen this video, like they're teenagers.
And you know, the perception is then the victim suddenly thinks like, oh, you know, he was just moving the line.
Oh my god.
And then called it abuse, that person would be a lot more liberated to go and seek help.
And you know what, if they get to court and they use that in court, they will throw it out. You know, like I had a sexual assault victim who was a child, and that child referred to her vagina as a flower, and that's what her parents chose to use. That did not get through court. He got off after sexually assaulting this young girl many, many times. He got off because they couldn't be sure that she meant vagina and vulva, or because she called it a flower. That's how important language is. And we're now telling our kids the words are moving the line, as if we're just like, and we're referring it to, you know, the example was if they ordered pizza and if you didn't want it.
I know. It's so, it puts ordering what you want for dinner on the same scale as sexual assault. And it's so problematic.
And I think what people don't understand is under the law, a common assault, right? If you and I are standing in front of each other and we're having a bit of an argument and I raise my fist and you go, oh shit, she's going to hit me. That's assault. I don't actually have to touch you to be guilty of a common assault. Mm. So if we're now telling our kids that it is moving a line, actually touching someone and going against their boundaries is, you know, we're not even using the words that are in our legislation. Like, how did this get signed off on?
I honestly don't know.
Like, what is going on?
Well, I looked in, I've like found the agency that created it and everything, and was just looking into the people who were on the board there and the like strategy directors. Yeah. And I was just looking at them and I was just like, I'm really, really, really confused. Like, I'm genuinely
confused. No one went, should we just like get on and say stop means stop and no means no, and yes is only a yes if it's an enthusiastic yes? Like, there you go, done. Pay me $4 million.
We also need the more, like, it needs to be more nuanced than that. And that's what I'm saying when I say we need more holistic education. We need to explain that, unfortunately, and until this changes, and it will take generations to change, a generation or two, there is still such a power imbalance between boys and girls, especially when they go. And that needs to come into play when we're navigating consent, because you're not on even playing fields, you know. And, you know, the boys need to be aware that they may be, you know, potentially accidentally coercing someone into something. And the girls need to be aware that it's likely that they will be easily coerced into something. Mm. And then their friends need to be aware that if they come back and tell them that they were coerced into something, to believe them, because that's, you know, really common, and that the worst thing to do is to invalidate them. We need to talk about the fact that most young people's first sexual experience, especially boys, happens because they're peer pressured into it. I mean, so many, this is just off like stories and growing up and like, you know, my experience, but, and also just speaking to a lot of my guy friends in the recent months, so many young boys, you know, have sex for the first time, or, you know, get head for the first time, and they tick a box and their friends stop paying them out about the fact that they haven't. And then they don't do it again a year or two later, because they're not actually ready to do it yet. Like, they don't want to be doing it either. And it's just almost like everyone's pressuring everyone, because that's how you're cool. I remember so clearly when I think back on it, I'm like, oh my God, that was so problematic. I used to completely openly say this to anyone. I had a really like long-term, I had a 4-year relationship when I was in high school, and like was like super, super duper in love, blah, blah, blah. I remember we waited so long to have sex, and I remember saying, I used to be like, oh, I'm so lucky he's already had sex, so he doesn't pressure me into having sex with him, because he's already ticked that box for his friends. Whereas
yuck,
and that was just normal, and everyone would just be like, yeah, nice, like, lucky, not me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you scored, got a good one there.
Yeah. The thing is as well, like, I don't think he was ready to, you know, we had sex when we were ready, as, you know, two young people, whatever, however old we were, after we were like, we were so lucky, again, super in love, 4-year relationship.
And like, sex is great. if both parties are down for it, sex is great. Why are we hiding that from our kids? Like, why is it not a simple conversation of, yeah, sex is great. You've got your whole life to do it. If you're getting that feeling in your tummy that says, don't like this, not in a good spot, you know, then get the hell out of there. Have an exit plan, you know, all of these things. And if you change your mind once you start, your head might say, yeah, I'm ready. Then you start and your instincts take over. But that's when it goes back to these fight or flight instincts. So, you know, people say to the victims, oh, well, she didn't fight him off, or she didn't yell and scream, or she just laid there and let it happen, because that is literally her body going into a biological way to protect herself, which is, you know, we accept that in every other way. Say I said, oh, someone robbed you the other night. Why didn't you wake up and fight back? Well, because I thought I was at danger. That's fine. But if you're being raped, then you're supposed to fight for your life, even though, you know, your body perceives that as a greater threat.
Exactly. And that's called fawning. It's a trauma response. It's a very gendered trauma response. It's most common in girls because humans fawn when the person who's putting them at risk is physically intimidating to them, which means that it's usually between a boy and a girl when it happens.
Mm-hmm. I've never even heard that term.
Yeah, it's on my, look at my Instagram highlights. It's called fawning. And it is a complete, there's fight, there's flight, there's freeze, and there's fawn. And fawning's only coming into discourse recently because, you know, and it's why people get asked, like, you know, there was a article in the news a few days ago about a girl who's trying to charge two boys for taking turns raping her while she was crying, which to me seems pretty fucking black and white, but anyway. And the barrister is saying, you went out with them after, there's CCTV footage of you smiling and laughing with them half an hour after the event. You put on makeup that night before you went to see them.
Oh my god, don't get me started on that.
And the thing is, we need to register in our children, because it's important that our children know that if they do fawn in a situation, if they do appease their oppressors as a way of exiting the situation, which is, as you said, a successful survival technique. Like, if someone's robbing your house and they're in your room, you're not going to jump up and try to whack them over the head in your pajamas. You're just going to lay there and, you know, do what you
absolutely
need to do.
Absolutely. Cavemen used to play dead. Like, it's not a new theory. Yeah, apparently rape victims don't get all of those things afforded to them. It's just a black and white.
And it's also why we need to, it's so important to teach our kids these things as well, because again, it's not like, as much as parents, like obviously parents have a massive role in raising a child, but their friends are so important. And we need to make sure that our children are good friends to their friends, so that when their friends say, oh, I'm really confused, this situation happened, but you know, like I'm still dating him, or you know, I still like went for breakfast with him the next day, our children need to be good friends and be able to explain to them that that's fawning, and you know, that that's a normal trauma response, and that their feelings are valid. Like when you're raising your child, you're not just making your child a better person, you're making everyone around them safer by equipping them with these language and tools.
Absolutely. And with those languages and tools, then I would hope that I'm, you know, raising boys that will speak up when they see something that isn't right, you know, and not be afraid to, you know, be a voice and to call things out. Like if my kids can grasp those concepts, I'm sure that the rest of the world can. It's just about literally using the correct words and just putting it out there. And, you know, actually, like, there's so many studies being done all around the world where, you know, rape culture is horrific and terrifying, and women are actually being attacked on the streets, you know, multiple times a day and things, but different kinds of rape, you know, and they're showing great success in getting those boys in that really high risk period of time, you know, that late teens sort of area where they're growing up with this as a culture, and teaching them, you know, with a victim empathy style course where it's showing them physical damage and injuries, and showing how women's lives change and what actually affects them going forward and how it's impacted their life, and making the person a person as opposed to a taco or a milkshake. Exactly. Which I just feel like, why is nobody telling the government this?
Don't worry, I will. I'm meeting with Minister Tajik today. I'm on it. Don't worry.
I shared this meme, this thing today, and it was like feminism, the radical opinion that women are people. Women are human. Like, fucking crazy.
No, I just want to go off as well. What's so important to like teach these boys in these, you know, when they're at those high risk years, what it is also to use their, not just give them the language, but also use their language. So instead of using big buzzwords, sexual assault, rape, coercion, blah, 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 say to them that saying something like, why did you come upstairs with me if you didn't want to do this to me? That's sexual coercion. Saying, please, all my friends have done this, that's coercion, and then that leads to sexual assault. You know, they need to say the phrases that people say, because no one thinks they're sexually assaulting someone. If they knew that they were doing it, they wouldn't do it. You know, these boys are just products of their society. They're not trying to be bad people. And, you know, giving examples of the types of things that people say, you know, oh, you're clearly not mature enough to do this with me if you don't want to do it, so I'm going to break up with you. Or I'm going to go for someone who's willing to do this for me. Or, you're so frigid, you're so boring, you won't send me a nude. We need to speak these blatant, like this language to these kids, because suddenly they'll start paying attention and be like, oh, I've heard my friend say that, or oh, I've said that. And suddenly it makes it real to them. When, again, if you're just talking about respect girls, blah, 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 they'd be like, yeah, obviously I respect girls, but they don't realize 100%. That calling is disrespect, or they don't realize that, you know, locker room talk, or, you know, paying your friend out for being a virgin is all contributing to the problem.
Yeah, or yeah, paying your mate out to be a virgin, but then paying out a woman for having sex as a slut, you know, because we can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I said this to Victorian Parliament when my aim was to convince everyone we lived in a rape culture, and we shame girls more, young girls more, for having consensual sex than we do young boys for sexually assaulting people.
So for the parents that are listening and thinking, okay, I'm not so sure about my school's education policies and what's going on, particularly ones with older kids that are perhaps thinking, okay, my kid is in this age group right now. So my kid's obviously younger. So I'm really hoping by the time my kids get to high school, you know, we're going to have a better grasp on all of this and education and things. But there are some parents that are really concerned now. So what should they be doing? Should they be contacting the schools? Obviously, your petitions are on your all through your Instagrams and stuff, which we'll link on our show notes.
First and foremost, if you're in New South Wales, I have a government e-petition up, which you can sign, which will trigger a debate in Parliament that will hopefully result in them agreeing that, you know, more holistic consent education is needed from an earlier age. Secondly, if you're at a school, especially a private institution, an independent school, these schools are businesses and you are the client. Telling them what you want is very effective. The reason that, you know, they're hiding behind this religious ethos as an excuse for not teaching consent is because they think that parents will have backlash on it, and some will. But I think that everyone needs to remember, you know, maybe religious ethos teaches abstinence and wants to avoid conversations of sex, and I'm not going to comment on that, but abstinence is a choice. Sexual assault is not a choice. So there is absolutely no reason that it cannot be taught in conjunction / like as a topic, even if that is the mindset of the school. And also parents, it's a really hard thing to say, but really, one, think about, if you have a boy, think about the fact that even though he is probably an absolute angel and you love him so much and he would never hurt a fly, think about the fact that he is a product of his society and his friend group, and just really consider if he is equipped with all this information to know how to make sure that he's not pressuring girls into sexual situations. And also, if you have girls, make sure that you've created an environment where they could come forward to you. And the thing is, I don't think any parent would be sitting here thinking like, oh, you know, there's no way my child would ever think I would get angry at them. But you don't realize that we pick up on everything you say and do. Your opinion on media piece, that's what we think about. Your opinion on, you know, when you say that, you know, something that someone's wearing is slutty, that's what we're thinking about. And that's what makes it hard to speak about sexual assault. I remember one of the biggest fights I've ever had with my parents. Never used to fight with my parents when I was younger, and like definitely never raised my voice. And I remember so clearly this because I was like actually screaming for the first time. And it was when Luke Lazarus was like front page of Sydney Morning Herald, which is, if anyone doesn't know, it's the perfect example of a rape case that, you know, it was so clear that he didn't know that he was raping her, but that doesn't matter because she got raped and he, you know, should be held accountable accordingly. But he was an anomaly. You know, he was an entitled opportunist type of rapist who was punished for his actions, which is so rare. And, you know, it just made an example of him. But I remember my parents saying things like, oh, you know, she was drunk at King's Cross at 2 a.m. in the morning. Like things like that. And I remember this is me, you know, 15 years old, just realizing that I had been sexually assaulted 2 years prior, and me thinking as if I could ever tell my parents, because their reaction is going to be, you know, oh my God, you know, you were drunk. And it's like, well no, he purposely got me drunk. Or, you know, oh my God, you know, you were in this place at this time when you were meant to be here and there. It's like you don't realize that the way you interact with other people's experiences of sexual assault and other people's sexualities and gendered expectations is what will decide whether your child is comfortable or not to come forward to you.
Yeah, that's massive. That's such a big thing. And, yeah, the victim blaming it just can't happen.
And also, if anyone is sitting here thinking, I don't victim blame, you're wrong. Like, I mean, I'm sorry to tell you, but yeah. I still, it's so hard to not victim blame. It's our whole society.
It goes back to that, I told you so. Like, well, why were you there? Why were you doing that? Why did you drink so much? Why were you not at home? You know, like we said, the responsibility and the onus is on the woman not to get raped as opposed to the men not to rape.
Yeah. And also parents do things like, you know, their child might come home and say they've been sexually assaulted and, you know, maybe they were out drinking or something. And then they, you know, even if they do handle the sexual assault situation right, they might ground them or something. And it's like, look at the big picture. Right now your child needs her friends. You know, you need to think about, you need to put discipline and parenting aside when a catastrophe or something like this happens to your daughter. And you also need to remember that there's a 1 in 3 chance that your daughter will be sexually assaulted. And then at the same time, it's not the same person who's sexually assaulting them all.
You said, like, obviously the hearing those things and that saying to you, okay, this is not a safe place for me just to disclose what's happened because I'm going to cop the, you know, why are we there, why are we drunk, all of those kinds of questions. How do you think it's changed now with your parents in being able to talk to them? Like, what's the conversations like now with you creating this movement?
With my dad, you know, my dad was born in, like, I don't even know, like the 50s or something. Like, he's old.
It's still a bit ick to talk about.
Yeah, I was speaking to him about it last night because I'm watching this documentary and there's, like, you know, scenes from, you know, like the 60s. And I was like, I can't believe that it was about, like, British colonization and the way that Africans were treated. And I was like, Dad, I can't believe you were like 17 during this. I was basically like, no wonder your views backwards. Like, this is what you grew up being normal. Like, it was normalized. And, you know, he was talking about, like, segregation on buses and the way women were treated and things like that. And I was just like, I do appreciate how far you've come, but he has come so far, but there's still, you know, there's still problems. Like, he'll say something and he'll be like, oh, but, you know, it was quite obvious that she went to his house. And I'm just like, Dad, going to someone's house, not me. Like, and he's like, okay, sorry, I'm learning, which is really nice. And just what needs to be done. Because the thing is, no one's going to get it right. Like, especially not like a 7-year-old male.
And that's literally it. Like, no one is asking anybody to be perfect here. It's that want to learn and that even just stopping, having empathy and turning your mind to somebody else's reality and somebody else's moment, you know, and using empathy as opposed to just shutting down the conversation with a blame. Oh, well, she was drunk.
Exactly.
End of conversation.
And it is, I understand why it's hard to comprehend. It's like I said, you know, born in the 50s, like, times have changed. The way that youth like, my dad probably would have a heart attack if he saw what was, like, normal for me and my friends to do on a weekend when we were young. But, you know,
of course, yeah.
He's learning and and that's what we need to do. We need to create a safe space for people to learn.
And women have come so far. Like, you think about, like, the balance in relationships and driving and money and all of those sort of things. Like, there's been plenty of women before you that have given us all these opportunities and things. So you can see how they're probably thinking, hey, you've got it pretty good. Like, from what my mum, you know, what his mum went through, he's probably thinking, well, you've got a pretty good, you know, you've got a pretty good gig.
Thing is, it's so generational. Like, we can't forget that my parents are slightly older for my age. I have, like, way older brothers. But, like, you know, that generation, you know, some of them were completely, like, alive and functioning humans when it was still legal to be able to rape your wife, like, you know, when you couldn't.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the thing is the way that we're taught, and then even, you know, your generation of parents, and even me, as I said, if anyone is sitting here thinking I've never victim blamed, I've never slut shamed, you're literally just wrong, because I'm saying that I have myself. Everyone has.
100%.
You don't realize you have, but it's in the small things. And like, I don't think, you know, as going back to my dad, I don't think when he's saying like, oh, but she texted him to go over, I don't think he realizes that that's what victim blaming is. I think people think that victim blaming is just saying, literally just saying it was her fault, but it's in the absolute most micro phrases that children pick up on to gauge what they can speak to their parents about and what they can't. And what's a safe space for them. And it's also at school. I mean, my teachers were, you know, victim blaming by nature as well.
Because
my whole point is that everyone is, unless they're actively not. And I always catch myself up on these, like, you know, in my mind I have a split second thought and I have to think, why did I just think that? And then the actions you do is what's important and what changes that. And that's just what everyone in the whole of Australia needs to be doing right now, at the same time that we change the education system to make sure that that's standardized as the new generation of Australians grow up.
It almost rolls off the tongue without you even realizing. Like, someone will tell you something and you're like, and I do it with even my children, and they're like, well, such and such did this to me. And you're like, well, what did you do? Like, where were you? What did you say? Like, it's, you know, it just almost rolls straight off the tongue. Like, that we have to actually hear it, sit in it, and before we start prodding and poking and, you know.
Yeah. And also you need to think, like, you know, you may have some questions. You, like, the question, well, you were drunk, may be applicable to the situation. And, you know, like, a parent probably would want to know that if their child says they're sexually assaulted. But you need to pretense that, saying, this is an absolutely no way me saying this is your fault. I'm just curious. I'm trying to gauge understanding of the situation, where you were, what the vibe was. Because, you know, saying, were you drunk? If the answer was yes, I was really drunk, then you come back at that and say, well, actually, you can't give consent when you're drunk, so that person sexually assaulted you. And then you validate your child.
Exactly.
Like, oh, you're so stupid for getting drunk. You're 16. You're grounded.
That's right. It's making them more vulnerable, particularly when you've got those situations, I think, is probably very common with teenagers, that, you know, they perhaps consent, or, you know, they're just playing around and everything's fine. And then they say, okay, that's enough. And it doesn't stop. And that, okay, let's take it back to, you know, how shamed you felt by, you know, having your collarbones exposed and being pulled up on that. So we're being told that our bodies are, you know, when we're naked or we're showing, we're vulnerable. So, you know, we're in a heightened state of vulnerability, probably intoxicated, because teenagers drink, that's what they do. You know, they take risk, like, risky behavior is a part of being a teenager. It's how they learn. It's how you become a great adult. You have to make those silly mistakes and take risks that backfire. That's a part of growing up. And you're already so vulnerable that an adult needs to step in and go, okay, you were drinking, you were super vulnerable, you couldn't have consented anyway. Yeah. You've done the right thing by telling me, because we don't want this to happen to anybody else, and we need to stop him doing this to anyone else. Exactly. And you to now get into the support that you need to deal with this.
Exactly. We just need a complete narrative shift.
Yeah. And we need to start dealing with it in the home.
Exactly. And it comes from as young as the child can socialize, you know, putting the onus on girls to not get sexually assaulted, instead of making sure that boys don't sexually assault. And I know there's more nuances to this than that. I know that, you know, boys can get sexually assaulted too, but most of the time that is by other boys. It's just, we just need to shift where our priorities lie. I need to fact check this, but someone said this to me who I trust, and I trust their statistic. They said to me, I would have brought up my boys and girls really differently if I knew that there was, that my daughter was more likely to get sexually assaulted than she was to smoke. And I just think, like, how much time and resources we put into teaching our kids about, you know, how to not smoke, basically, and, like, how bad it is for us, and, like, how to, you know, engage in, you know, these risk-taking situations in a healthy way while avoiding smoking and things like that. And it's just like, imagine if you knew that you actually should have been putting that much time and effort and resources into preventing sexual assault. And then on the other end of that, the fact that if you told people, you know, 60 years ago that barely anyone smokes anymore and things like that, it would be shocking. And they'd be like, what? Like, no, ridiculous. But the money that went into campaigning about education and risk and all that completely shifted our society. And sexual assault is a health issue. It's a human rights issue. It's a health issue. And, you know, that's the type of resources we need at a parental level, at a school level, at a government level, to change this culture. To, you know, sexual assault, it's our new crisis. We have an epidemic of sexual assault in Australia, and it needs to be addressed accordingly.
And let's not forget that I didn't see a single taco ad in reference to stop smoking.
And this constant, I'm just going to say one last thing because I know we have to wrap up, but this constant, the thing that gets me the most is telling young girls, you know, you have to protect yourself from sex. Boys are going to try to chase after it. You have to say no, you have to say no, you have to say no. And one, again, it's putting the onus on them. Two, it's normalizing coercion because it normalizes the fact that they're going to keep trying. Three, it's unrealistic to tell girls that they're not going to enjoy sex and they don't want it. These young teenage girls have a sexuality. They are curious. They want to experiment. We have to empower them to do it in a healthy way.
And we want them to.
Yeah. And as you said before, if they know that sex is meant to be a good thing, they will be able to distinguish between a consensual and a non-consensual situation and know when to get themselves out of a situation and when they're actually meant to be there. But if we just tell them that it's always meant to be bad, this is why they keep having the delayed realization they've been sexually assaulted once they realize what sex is actually meant to be like once they're older.
Yeah, why are we robbing our girls of pleasure? Why are we robbing our women of safety and pleasure? Like this is where, you know, then we go into the domestic violence and everywhere else that we then have women living lives with no pleasure and no joy because they feel like they're not entitled to it.
100%. It's all connected and it's so problematic and it completely starts with the way we're socialized and the things we taboo in our household and the things we openly talk about. And also my background is I'm currently a master's student at University College London studying gender education and international development. And I'm, you know, currently writing a 20,000 word report on this on top of other research I've done. And endless research, time after time, study after study shows that one, open conversations about sex and sexuality and, you know, not tabooing the subject and early interventions of teaching about consent time and time again leads to one, a increase in age of first sexual experience, which means that teens are usually older when they have their first sexual experience. And two, a decrease in teen sex rates overall. So less teenage people having sex. And then three, it's shown with like constant intervention and consistent programs that sexual assault rates decrease massively.
So this is every parent out there's call to action. These conversations, however they may make you feel, the more you talk about it, the easier they get and the more receptive your kids will be to it and the more that dialogue will be able, you know, to move freely as they get older. You know, you can mimic consent in so many different ways. Can I wipe your face? Can I help you with your shorts? You know, those kinds of things before you go in and jump all over kids and stuff, getting them to, you know, find that empathy and find that compassion when they're dealing with your sibling rivalries and things like that. But also like mimicking healthy relationships in the home. Like our kids laugh their heads off when they see their dad cuddle me or kiss me or something and have that fun, you know, moment in our home where mum's happy, dad's happy, the feeling in the air feels really, really good, you know, so they see those people together and embrace as, oh, this feels really, really nice, as opposed to that sinking stomach, a feeling in their stomach they're going to get when they get older if this is not a situation that they should be in. So this is their call to action.
Please. This is a plea from me. Please.
You are doing amazing things and every woman here in Australia is just so proud of you and so behind you. And I'm sorry that it, you know, it fell on your shoulders and that it's still so bad.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to so many people and the unique lens of parents in this conversation.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for tuning in today. I would love to continue the conversation with you over on Instagram. At the Conscious Project Podcast. Hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. And I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to leave me a 5-star review. It really does help. Take care.